Welcome to the Duluth Vineyard Podcast. This message is recorded from one of our weekend services. As a church, we are a community from all different walks of life who are learning to love God and love one another. We're a place where everyone is welcome, true believers, along with the curious, the skeptical, the wounded, and even the disillusioned. We're a place of new hope and second chances. We're a church where God can be found. You can find out more about the Vineyard Church in Duluth on our website at duluthvineyard.org. Thanks for listening.
One of our... Jordan Shermer, welcome.
I snuck up on you.
You did. One of our huge key values here at the Vineyard is to continually be training up leaders. And... Jordan Shermer will be speaking with us today. She has been a leader here at the Vineyard for, I don't know, it seems like a gazillion years.
Oh, gosh.
But you don't look that old.
Thanks. That's good. This is starting out well.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But you know, any community is really only as strong as its leadership base. And so one of the things that if you hang out around the Vineyard for very long, that you'll discover is that as a staff, we put a lot of our time and energy into training up leaders, especially our next generation of leaders. And so you guys are in for a real treat today. Jordan's going to be sharing out of 2 Corinthians, and we're continuing the series that we've been doing about what does a community of Jesus look like. So, Jordan, take it away.
Thank you. How are you guys doing? Good. Did everyone wear their red, white, and blue today? I was just remembering that in middle school, I had these awesome pair of sneakers that were red with white stars, and like every 4th of July, I'd get up and put them on right away. I was like, it's the 4th of July, it's sneaker day. So I was hoping that you guys like were sporting your fancy red, white, and blue too. So here's a question for you. Do you guys love before and after pictures? Like the ones in magazines that can be like people's houses that were really crummy to start with, and people come in, make them really beautiful, and then there's like these amazing after pictures. Or like my favorite are the beauty shot ones where the before pictures are always super horrible. Like the person's been locked in a basement for 3 years with a feral badger and a mug of water, and they come out for their picture, and then like the next picture is like their hair is flowing, collars up, flawless face, and you're like, Aunt Judy, is that really you? Like, it's impossible, but it's true. Like, these before and after pictures are miraculous. And I like to think that that's not only, like, for our living rooms and from the neck up, but that there's hope for a before and after thing to happen in each of us. Like, that we're actually becoming something and that we have hope of changing and transforming. And I know we're in a church, so we always include Jesus in this stuff. And so you're going to know that I'm going to say that Jesus is a part of that, that he's part of making some sort of after picture in each of us. But Jesus, he's not interested in just like coming in and reorganizing our bookshelf or tearing off that really ugly goose print wallpaper that we have up, but that he actually wants to come and rearrange everything in our lives. And that it's not only like this one little moment right now sort of thing, but that he's got this eternal long-term picture that all of us are actually a part of and that he's doing something with, like in the long term. So what we're going to do is we are going to jump into, like Michael said, these three chapters in 2 Corinthians. And we're going to go through, you know, bits and pieces through all of it. And in that, we see Paul paint this really great picture of what it looks like being people who are confronted and being encountered with and engaging in transformation, and how there really is a before and after picture that Jesus is leading us into. So we're going to take that, we're going to take what Paul's writing and kind of put on a lens. Like, so we're seeing the big picture that God's seeing, and even how our lives would fit into it and how God would be preparing us for like the long term, like not just today. Because I think we're all hungry for change. We all are desperate and aching to see an after picture happen in each of us. I mean, if we're grabbing onto Jesus, we want to see him do something in our lives. So I'm going to pray for us quick, and then we're going to jump right into it. So Jesus, would you come and fill this big old room up? And God, I ask that you would just start like just whetting our appetites for transformation, that we would like honestly want to change in a really good and healthy way. God, would we just feel just your call and your softness towards it? God, I ask that you would fill every seat around us, that you would begin talking to us, and even putting your finger on the areas that you just want to bring an after picture to. God, thanks for hanging out with us here and for inviting us into something more. Amen. Cool. So if you want to open your Bibles, if you have one of these, it's on page 791. And I'm going to read, it's 2 Corinthians 3, 7 through 18. And what we have here is just like the beginning chunk of the next three chapters we're going to talk about. But within this, this little piece here gives us a really good setup of how like the before and after picture is already starting and how God is setting that up and what he's really offering to us and how it's possible through what Jesus is doing here. So I'm going to read it for us, starting on 7. Now if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters on stone, came with glory, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, transitory though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? See, he's already making the before and after comparisons here. If the ministry that brought condemnation was glorious, how much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? For what was glorious has no glory now in comparison with the surpassing glory. And if what was transitory came with glory, how much greater is the glory of that which lasts? He uses the word glory a lot. Man, okay. Verse 12. Therefore, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. We are not like Moses, who would put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. That's the before picture. But their minds were made dull, for to this day the same veil remains when the old covenant is read. It has not been removed because only in Christ is it taken away. That's the after picture. Even to this day, when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, and we see in like each of these little sentences, Paul is doing this thing where he's comparing a before and after, even in these two paragraphs, of something that happened in the past and what we have now that's being offered to us, and how the differences and how life and death and all the stuff that's going on. And it somehow makes sense for our little lives right now. So let me explain this comparison he's making. Paul is pointing back to this place in the Old Testament where our buddy Moses is, he interacts with God and gets this thing called the Ten Commandments. And we mostly understand this story as Charlton Heston wearing a burlap sack and a giant beard and holding these two stone tablets with like lightning coming down on the cover of a movie, right? You guys ever seen that movie, The Ten Commandments? It's a goodie. So, but what the Jewish people who were hanging out with Moses at that time, they understood this like crazy experience that Moses had as the God of the universe coming to interact with his people. And God was doing it to this guy named Moses. And like Moses comes down from the mountain after hanging out with Jesus, or hanging out with God, and has these stone tablets, and suddenly like God's people have a way to righteousness again. They have a way to set things right, and it's being done by these set of rules and guidelines that God gave Moses for these people to live by. So it was this powerful experience. And the exchange was like brimming with the power of God. Like Moses came back from this mountain and said his face was literally glowing like a fluorescent lamp because he had come so close to God that like the side effect was that his face was like, I don't know, glowworm or something. Like, I don't even know, fluorescent lamp style. Like the people couldn't even look at him. Like the power of God was just oozing out so strong. But the bad news is that like the fluorescent lamp didn't keep glowing, like it didn't last. Because Moses didn't have like this internal generator to keep like his face lit up, and he couldn't go hang out with God any old time at that point like in history. And so eventually the light bulb juice starts draining out. And it says here, it talks about this veil, like Moses ends up putting like this little curtain or a veil over his face because he doesn't want people seeing like, man, like God's dripping out of me, like his juice is running out. And what's more, these people who now have these sets of rules to live by that are supposed to help them like actually reconnect with God and live in a way that God's intended them to live, they're falling on their faces like over and over and over again, like incapable of keeping these rules and like being perfect and finding out that actually they're pretty weak and pretty rebellious, which sounds a lot like us, doesn't it? I think if we're honest, we're a lot like Moses and his buddies hanging out by the mountain with their stone tablets and beards and burlap sacks. Because a lot of us are making plans maybe for our lives, or we have like these grand ideas of what we'd like to become, or like we really would like to be this type of person, or we want to be like Jesus, but man, we really lack the juice to get there. And we have tried mustering it up from inside of ourselves and finding that we fall flat on our faces over and over and over again. Or we're like afraid to even map out a plan or even ask God like what he would want to do with our lives, because like we've experienced a lot of failure and we don't want to flop again, or we're afraid to hear what he has to say. So we find ourselves in a place of like juggling rules and feeling exhausted and drained. When thank goodness, like this wasn't God's plan at all. Like he never intended us to try to do this without himself. And so what he was doing, and how Paul sort of compares this, is that he started way back then with this like old covenant where he was moving us in a direction and bringing us to this place like right now where we have the opportunity to have this like humbling, ridiculous, intimate relationship with Jesus, which is different than these sets of rules, but Jesus, who actually allows us to connect with God and actually is this thing, this like agent that helps us become who we've really made to be. And he knows that we're falling flat on our faces over and over and over, but Jesus gets to fill that gap for us. And now we have hope of becoming and actually transforming. And that there's actually like hope of an after picture for us and not just flop after flop after flop. It's exciting business, isn't it? So it's really as if God is saying, like, I do want you to be and I do want you to become who I've made you to be. And I'm not going to make it, like, depend on your shoulders anymore to fulfill these promises that, like, honestly, you just can't keep. So we're going to put, like, that sort of eternal perspective cap on us, like, heading in that direction of, like, transformation all of Jesus. And see how it specifically changes like specific radical pieces of our hearts and insides of us. So let's start out with this point. An eternal perspective gives the self an overhaul. This is a verse from 2 Corinthians 4:18. This is within our three chapters we're kind of looking into. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So if we're really honest here, how much of us like just daydream about eternal things? We're not really usually thinking about eternal things. We're usually thinking about like what we're doing right now, like our grocery lists, our email we have to check up on. I almost said milking the cows. Does anyone here have cows to milk? Maybe that's on your to-do list. Who knows? That's weird. But to be honest, we're thinking about ourselves most of the time, like the right now, the me, me, me. We got a lot of ourselves, like the me, me, me thing just like coursing through us. Listen to this kind of harsh quote from a self-help blogger. That's a new term. He's an author too, but he's also a blogger. His name is Steve Pavlina. And this is what he says about the me, me, me thing going on inside of us. People are inherently selfish and cannot be expected to act against their own self-interest. Selfishness is rooted in our biology, even encoded in our genes. We're ultimately Pavlovian stimulus response machines. That is an interesting thing to call ourselves. Driven by pleasure and pain. Those who seem to serve the greater good only do so because on some level it gives them pleasure, or they'd feel pain if they didn't. Ouch. Maybe it makes more sense to think about this lovely girl instead.
I want an Oompa Loompa now!
Do you guys remember her? Willy Wonka. She was like the poster child for kind of the spoiled brat in the movie where everything was like me, me, me. Where this is the point where she's demanding that her dad gives her an Oompa Loompa. It's all things I know we've asked our dad for. Oompa Loompas. They'd be fun to have around. So it's harsh stuff. Like, we're honest. We know that this me stuff is inside of us. So how in the world do we stop being the boss then? Because somehow we know that if we've got the me thing going on, we can't want Jesus at the same time. It's like if you put those things in the same room, like, I want this all to be about me, but I also want it all to be about Jesus, like, a combustion happens. Like, you just can't put those things together. They butt heads. So maybe it helps to think of it this way. The Bible talks about Jesus as having all-surpassing power and eternal glory that, like, far outweighs all others. Like, hear about someone who has all-surpassing power and eternal glory. Like, it's not the typical guy you'd run into at Fleet Farm, is it? It's a pretty, like, exceptional person. And when they're talking about someone who has those qualities, you got to ask yourself, like, do I need to respond to that? Like, what should my reaction be to someone who says that they have all the power in the world and, like, all the glory that could ever be there? So at the end of the Bible, we see this picture of, like, everybody on earth, like, bowing down to Jesus. Like, this reaction to him of him having this power and glory. Like, the people can't help but sputter out that he's king. They can't even stand their feet. They're, like, flat on their faces, submitted to Jesus. That's intense. And that's, like, the long away big picture of what it looks like for Jesus to actually be king. But right now, we're like millions of little pictures as part of this, like, big eternal picture where we're learning what it means, like, to submit to Jesus right now and to call him king in our lives and to ask him to actually, like, come and rearrange this area and this area and be boss in this area and this area. And when we think about Jesus being boss in our lives, like, we tend to think of the really big areas, right? Like, well, maybe Jesus can decide if I'm marrying the right person. Or, yeah, it's good that Jesus decides that we want to be nice people. Like, I'll work on that for the rest of my life. But it gets kind of freaky when we're asking Jesus to be boss and we realize that he wants to do it in, like, the really small areas that you really wouldn't even think of inviting Jesus to be a part of. Like, I'll give you an example from my life. Does anyone here have Facebook? Yeah. Does anyone here spend way too much time on it? Oh, yeah, me too. So last week, I was on Facebook and scrolling through my friends' cutesy status updates and then, like, their cutesy pictures and their cutesy comments. And if you know anything about Facebook, that turns into, like, looking at their friends' cutesy comments and then, like, oh, look at their friend's update. Oh, look at this person's picture. And pretty soon you're, like, link after link to this thing, reading stuff about somebody in Hong Kong you've never met before. It's, like, crazy business how Facebook works. And not only that, but, like, as you're digging deeper and deeper into this, you feel this, like, oozing insecurity, like, come up and just, like, slime over you because all of a sudden you're looking at pictures of parties that you're like, wow, I didn't even know that party happened. Like, thanks for letting me know about that one. Or, like, you're looking at someone's baby pictures, you're like, oh, I didn't even know they were having a baby. Wow, I guess, like, I thought we were pretty good friends. Like, all this stuff starts coming through you and, like, getting worked up, and in the middle of it, you hear Jesus say, stop. This is unhealthy. And at this point, like, I'm looking at wedding pictures from my second cousin's third child, whom I also never met. I'm, like, getting all worked up inside. But I realize that if Jesus, who has all-surpassing power and glory, is coming and wanting to be boss of my life, and he's coming and showing up while I'm on Facebook, then I really should probably say yes. Because Jesus wants to be the boss in, like, the little picture, like, the small stuff. And that's humbling. And, man, it's hard to think about how he wants to affect every little piece of our life and be boss in this area and this area. And for you, maybe it's not Facebook, but it's some other small area in your life that you encounter every single day that you know, like, man, God has not ever been a part of that. Like, this is a little compartment of life that's just stayed right close to me, but Jesus is wanting to, like, lock it open and be a part of that one and that one and that one. It's wild stuff with Jesus. So we encounter him starting to want to be boss in our life. And at first thought, we think, oh, great, Jesus is going to be this guy who's going to show up in every area and, like, twitch his finger at us and be like, you little twits, like, I'm the boss here, not you. Like, that sounds horrible. So how does Jesus do this? Because the truth is, we end up making out better than we thought when we're following Jesus. And this is the good, good news, I think. Listen to chapter 4, verses 7, 8, and 9. It says this, "But we have the treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed." So Paul is setting up this picture here of what it looks like to be ordinary chumps like us. Do you guys know that we're all ordinary chumps? That's a fun thing to be. What he calls it are jars of clay. He's just saying like the simple like vessel, a simple encasement. Like we're just chumps. And we're chumps who struggle, quite honestly. Like we've got conflict and brokenness and things that have been like happening for years in our lives. And it sounds harsh, but the thing is, there isn't one of us who can live one week who doesn't like bump up into struggle or conflict or even carry around like the stuff that has been happening way, way, way back in our childhoods that still bubbles up in us even now. And so that can look like the small stuff every week, like aggravating lunch break after lunch break with the coworker who drives you mad. Or it can be the really hard stuff, like desperately wanting a child and hearing from your doctor that it's physically impossible. Or it can be stress, it can be loneliness, it can be your explosive temper, or it can be being in the path of somebody who has an explosive temper. Like, our brokenness erupts everywhere around us and in us. I like how Mr. Rogers says it, actually. "Little by little, we human beings are confronted with situations that give us more and more clues that we are not perfect." That's a good Mr. Rogers quote. Don't you guys like him? And his sweaters and his little puppets. He's a good guy. So the reality of that, of Mr. Rogers and his quote about perfection, is we know that we're not perfect, the people around us aren't perfect, and we don't have perfect reactions towards them either. And that's sometimes a little bit sad and overwhelming to see like so much brokenness in us and around us. And sometimes we find ourselves even in like survival mode, trying to get past the brokenness, trying to get through the lunch break with our coworkers, or like, I'm just gonna like be numb when I think about kids and you know, like I want them, but like whatever, like I'll just enter that survival mode because we don't even know how to dig underneath the surface. We don't even know how to deal with the stuff we're encountering. So what Paul isn't saying in this verse about the jars of clay and like how we can be pressed but not crushed, he's not saying that life isn't hard. That's obvious to us. We know that life is hard. But what he is saying, and this is the good news and how we make it out better than we thought, is that this thing with Jesus provides like this life-producing, supernatural presence that he pours into us. And that it's the thing that actually lets us be ordinary chumps on the outside. But what used to crush us on the inside, the news about not having kids or like the loneliness we feel when we go home, the stuff that used to like tear us apart and just pick at us, like now God is coming in those places with a presence that's like from out of this world, that's not natural, and it's like doing something else in there. It's bringing peace, it's bringing like comfort and love and all the things that we naturally like can't muster up on our own. And that's crazy because that means that there's actually something coming to us that debunks like the system that we live in, the survival modes and like the limping and the stuff that we naturally do to get through life. Like we get something from Jesus to make it through, and it's really, really good. So remember Moses and how his light bulb face drained out after like, I don't know, a couple days, and he had to put his little curtain up to hide it? So what God set up through Jesus was this really sweet deal of being able to be plugged in with him all the time. Like, it wasn't just, like, this one mountainside experience like Moses had where he had one shot at having his, like, light bulb juiced up. But we get to be with him all the time. And that means that the supernatural stuff is available all the time. And that we get to plug in with him all the time. And so I guess you're wondering, like, what in the heck does this look like? Like, how do you actually receive something supernatural? Like, do you have to, like, stick a metal rod up in the air and like hope that like the Jesus like electricity comes down your antenna? Like, what does that look like? So here's a story from my friend that I think is a really good example, just super practical of how God gave her something supernatural. So a couple weeks ago, my friend came home from work. She was super tired after a long shift, and she had a pretty good case of the crabbies going on. She gets home, starts hanging out with her husband, and lo and behold, like everything her husband's doing is just like making it worse. Like it's like pushing on the crabbiness inside of her, and like it's festering and getting worse. Which, by the way, really freaks me out because I'm getting married in a couple months, and I hope that that's not the case every time you go home. Like, awesome, we just, like, push on each other's crabbiness. Sweet, okay. So, meanwhile, her husband's, like, poking on this thing and start, like, boiling and bubbling, and as she's, like, getting worked up, she feels Jesus just, like, come really close and say to her, like, come to me. Come to me and get something supernatural right now so that you don't go and like barf your crabbiness up on your husband and do or say something that you really don't want to do or say. And she ignores Jesus, which is what we tend to like to do. And she like, you know, they keep fighting and kind of like bubbling until all of a sudden it like erupts. And it turns into an all-out fight. They're slamming car doors, fighting in the parking lot, and now they're storming through the produce aisle at the grocery store. And she's like standing over a crate of beans, like fuming, picking through them. And she feels Jesus come again and say like the same thing. And this time she says, God, I don't want to treat my husband like this. Like, I don't want to fight with him like this. Would you come and do something about my anger right now? And in a split second, she feels Jesus come and just put this softness in her, which equals like this genuine love that actually helps her treat her husband in the way that she wants to treat him. And see him in the way that Jesus sees him, which, you know, is nothing that she could have mustered up on her own, because at this point she way crossed that line, and you know, like all that was coming out was just like blech. But Jesus came and put the softness in. It's a pretty incredible deal we get. And that's available like over and over and over, like a million times a day if we need to. Like there's no quota, there's no end to the supernatural juice Jesus has. Like it doesn't hit 10 o'clock and he's like, sorry, store's closed, like come back tomorrow. Like it's always available. That's amazing. And, you know, it's not like God is getting a good deal here. You know, like we give him our garbage and our really crappy thoughts and like the stuff that we want to get rid of. And he totally scoops that out and puts in these beautiful, lovely, treasured things that, man, makes life better for us and the people around us. But God is a really clever dude here. Like, he knows the deal he's getting. He knows it's not like, you know, some great eBay deal. But he also knows that he's doing something with us in the long haul, that we're part of a big picture of what God's doing, and he's preparing us for something eternal. So this brings us to the next point, how we measure up. In verses 9 and 10 in chapter 5, this is in our three-chapter chunk here, it says this, so we make our end goal, like this place where we're heading, to please him, whether we are at home in the body or away in it, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. That's what's like this thing coming, that everyone may receive what is due them for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. So, and then there's judgment. Nobody likes to talk about judgment, do they? Like, people want to say, like, Jesus is love, not judgment. It's true, Jesus is love, but he talks a lot about judgment too. He even has this bit in Matthew where he talks about these herds of goats and sheep coming to him. And Jesus is like looking at the goat and sheep and he's separating them into two different groups. And he's sending the goats away to like this fiery place that's like away from him. And he's keeping the sheep to live with him forever, which is a crazy picture. Like, what is he doing here? Like, is he setting up a petting zoo? Like, does he really like mutton? Did he have some bad experiences with goats? Like, what does this mean? But the point here is that Jesus is illustrating what's to come, and that there's an actual time planned where we're all going to like come before Jesus, and he's going to honestly evaluate our lives and look at the choices we made and like the things that we did, and he's actually sending us into directions that have eternal implications, like with him forever or away from him forever. So this is important to talk about because you know, it sounds freaky and scary, like it's the thing we kind of don't want to talk about, that Jesus is going to do this. But the truth is, we're honestly, like, we're pretty comfortable with evaluation. Like, we get a lot of it in our lives. Think about all the ways that we let our lives be evaluated, in our grades, in our job reviews, and we take quizzes in magazines, even our church. We do an all-church survey every year because we want to know how we're doing, and we're asking for input and how we can do it better. That stuff matters a great deal to us. We want to be doing well. But if we step into this eternal perspective, we see that there's a final exam on the horizon that's not run by our bosses or our teachers or our parents or the culture around us, but it's run by Jesus. And this is key because this brings like a major shift in our thinking, because not only is the final exam run by Jesus, but it means that if we want to do well on it, then we got to learn from the teacher who's actually giving the exam. So why is Jesus doing this though? Like, why bother with these crazy goats and sheep? And like, is he just trying to be a cruel teacher who's creating a test we can't possibly pass? Or is he doing this like really rotten thing where like he talks about like we're all in by this free gift of grace, but then you get there and he's like, JK, LOL, it was all on your shoulders after all. See ya, goats. Like, that would be horrible. Like, we're sent off to this place where our coworkers are always chewing with their mouths open and there is nothing supernatural that's going to come and make it better. Man. That, if that's all that hell is, no, it's worse than that. Okay. What Jesus really is doing is that he's recreating heaven and earth to be perfect. And the reason he's doing this is because us trying to be boss, like, all along, and still wanting to be boss still, have destroyed it. Like, we've messed it up. But Jesus hasn't changed at all, and he's still perfect, and he's creating this place that's, like, back to what he meant it to be, where things are set right, where he is, like, the king of it, where he's getting what he wants. And, of course, he's inviting us into it. He's like, come with me. Like, I want you in for the long haul. Come be a part of the place where, like, I make everything right. But here, where we are right now, like, he's giving us the choice right now. Like, do we want him to be king right now? And so right now we're making that decision, and when we say no now, it means that in this place, like, he just says no back to us. Like, you didn't want to be with me. Like, you don't want to be with me now then either. So if this is actually the case, it's more of a fork in the road, isn't it? Like, what starts out looking like a final exam is actually this big divider where we're heading in these different directions. And if that's part of the eternal plan, then that changes what happens, like, right now, doesn't it? Because that means I get to say that Jesus is boss right now because it's true, because it's good for me, and because I know what's coming. And that I actually want to keep heading in this direction of being with Jesus, like, more and more forever and ever. And we get to make, like, decisions like that right now. Whew. So if that's the case, this business also changes, like, how we interact with people, too. Because it's not only, like, the me thing, but it's, like, how this sort of stuff is happening. So I like to think of it, like, in terms of, like, dinner parties. Like, the eternal perspective changes dinner parties. Because what's the classic dinner party scene? Like, if we're getting really classy here, I would think of maybe the Gitche Gammy Club. Has anyone here been there? Man, I have wanted to sneak into that place so many times. It's just, like, so enticing, this beautiful, like, mansion place. But I didn't have my ascot on, so I couldn't go in. I don't know if you have to wear one of those if you go there. But I picture these people who are wearing, like, gowns and fancy suits and, like, ascots. Is that even a thing that you wear? All right, I think they're pretty fancy. Or maybe like your classic dinner party is like a barbecue on your porch, or like a meal at your grandma's, or even at the booth at McDonald's. It's just basically where we're hanging out. And what happens when you're hanging out with people eating? You do a lot of hobnobbing, right? Like a lot of like pleasantries and small talk. Like maybe if you're at the Gitche Gammy Club, you might say things like, oh, I adore your monocle. I don't know. Do people really wear monocles besides the Planters peanut guy? I don't know. Or maybe if you're like on the porch with your barbecue, maybe like your small talk is like, good meat chunks. Yep. I don't know. We just like, we're really good at just like coming up with the surfacey stuff. Like, it's how we kind of get by with our dinner parties. But the crummy thing is, like, we're not thinking those things on the inside, are we? Like, we're more thinking things like, you send your kids to that school, or your house looks like this, or like, your monocle isn't that cool. Like, there's this disconnect with how we're engaging with people. Like, we're only going, like, on the surface with these, like, first impressions sort of things. So how do we actually go underneath the surface? Because listen to this. Paul's first experience with Jesus, and you can read about this in Acts. Jesus didn't stay on the surface with Paul. It was this, like, crazy, profound experience where Jesus, like, came and shone this light on just Paul's heart, which was really dark and broken. Like, Paul was kind of a vicious guy before he met Jesus. And Jesus looked in there, saw all these broken things, and he began addressing the needs and brokenness in Paul's life and, like, began calling him to life and to transformation, like, from the get-go. And so he goes on to say, Paul, that Jesus is doing that same thing with all of us. Like, he's actually shining the light on each and every one of our hearts and, like, putting his finger on little issues and places where he would just love to bring his life to and love to just meet those needs and start transforming what's going on inside of us. So imagine this. Imagine we're back in the Gitche Gammy Club and we're, like, talking about cummerbunds or... I'm really sorry if you guys go to the Gitche Gammy Club and you're like, we don't talk about cummerbunds there. I just want to pretend. It sounds fun. Okay. Or maybe you're like back on the tailgate talking about meat chunks or whatever. But this time, you look around the room, and instead of seeing all the surfacey things, like, you actually see that, like, this guy, his heart is broken. Like, he just went through a divorce. And this woman, like, you can see that she's had low self-esteem since middle school, and he is in gambling debt, like, over his head and is afraid to ask for help. And she's on medication for panic attacks and, like, has struggled for years. Like, what if we were beginning to see those things in people's lives? Do you know that God actually shows us that stuff? That's the wild business, I think. That he's actually, like, shining that light in, and that he's inviting us, if we dare to come and, like, peer in with him and see what's really going on with the people around us. Because he so wants to just engage us and each other in what he's doing in people's lives so that we can help bring his life into those places. Like, that is a challenge I dare you to try, because it is crazy business. Like, imagine doing it with your families, or at work, or with your neighbors next door, or how about at Sam's Club? Like, those sample ladies, you would never see them the same after that. And the first time I really profoundly remember seeing underneath the surface in somebody's life, I was just like a little chump in college. I think I was a sophomore in college, and I was waltzing through the hallways and ran into a guy I had just met. I barely even knew him. And we were doing the whole hobnobby thing and, you know, talking about the surfacey stuff. And in a split second, it was like God downloaded this information in me about my new friend that I would have no way of knowing, like, no natural way of guessing. So, like, all of a sudden, I clearly knew this guy had a drinking problem, that he was experiencing so much shame and guilt about it, and that he was specifically going to hang out with a group of people this weekend that he would struggle with the most. I was like, where is this stuff coming from? Like, this is nuts to me. Like, I don't even know if this is true. Like, I know I have a crazy imagination. I'm probably making this up. And so, like, that starts happening. And then pretty soon I hear God say a little bit more. And I hear God say, like, and I want you to tell him that I care about this and that I actually want to come and help him. And that's the point where I'm like, no, God, I am not doing this. This is nuts. I don't even know this guy, and, like, I am not going to accuse him of a drinking problem. This is crazy. And so I went home and started doing homework, and God was, like, he kept, like, bugging me. Like, I was sitting there trying to do whatever it was, and he was like, tell him, call him, call him. I'm telling you to do this. And I'm like, no, God. I'm like, I have homework. I'm doing my homework. That's a good thing to do. But he wouldn't stop bugging me, so I'm like, fine, I'm going to do this. I found his phone number, gave him a call, and this is what it sounded like.
don't use this as a model. I was like, Matt? He's like, yeah? This is Jordan. I think that God is talking to me. And he's like, okay. And then this is like the doozy where I'm like, oh gosh, someone needs to hit me over the head. This is too scary. Do you have a drinking problem? And are you going to hang out with people that maybe it's really hard not to drink a lot with? And there was like silence. And I'm like, like sweating and like whatever. And finally he breaks the silence and he's like, yeah. I was like, holy crap. And that's where I got to come and say, well, this is good news because God is actually talking to me about this. And he wants to show up in your life and do something about it and actually give you some strength to like step out of this brokenness in your life. So here I was on a phone with a guy I barely knew. He was crying and confessing some major stuff in his life. And all the while I'm hearing God say, I love this kid. Tell him that I am with him. So nuts. Which, if you want to know the end of the story, like, he ended up saying, like, well, can we, like, go for coffee? Because this is weird. I explained a little bit more about what God is saying, and he, like, decided not to hang out with those people and started actually being honest about the struggles in his life. Whatever. God knew that this was going to open up just this path of healing in him. And it started with me being in a hallway and just, like, getting this crazy download of information from Jesus. So crazy. And this brings us to the second point of how we stop being users. Because God doesn't give us that stuff just for a crazy sci-fi experience. Like, he's not just trying to, like, make things weird, but that he's actually asking us to be a part of what he's doing in other people's lives. So when we start stepping into that and start saying, like, God, I want to start being engaged with what you're doing in other people, it totally confronts what's going on in us. Because, I mean, even in that little instant of that story, like, man, I threw out a million excuses and a million, like, things that I just didn't want to do. I didn't want to look stupid. I didn't want to take the risk. I wanted to get my stuff done. I didn't want to use the time for it. And that's true for all of us. We like to stick in our cubicles. We like to stay in our picket fences. We don't like looking like doofuses. We don't like taking risks. We don't like whatever. Being stupid, it's easier to just like stay in our own little worlds. But listen to this verse. It's from 5:18. All this is from God who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us that same ministry of reconciliation. In other words, that thing of him reconnecting us to God and each other's. And we are therefore to be Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. Like, we get to be the ones with God's message and invitation and even, like, his felt presence is living inside of us. And we get to be the ones who are mingling with each other and, like, finding out what God's doing in each other's lives and pointing each other back to Jesus. That's crazy. It's not, like, supernatural for us, because what's natural is to think about me. And even if some of us, like, tend to like people or kind of like want to love people, like it's just sort of in us, which by the way is like, it feels like it's been natural for me, and it doesn't always get to the most glamorous things. Like in high school, all my formal dances were with foreign exchange students, okay? Like that's what it got me in high school. And you can only handle so many dances with Peter Vender Uterholm, okay? No, it really was a good experience. He was Danish. So all that to say, like, even if we spend a lot of our lives maybe even wanting to be loving people or wanting to do the nice things that we feel like God is, like, maybe picturing us being, like, unless that's plugged in with Jesus, we end up being people who are nice out of obligation, or we're nice because we think we should be, or we're nice because we're trying to prove something, or, you know, the whole list of other reasons why we're nice and the motivations that come behind it. But what if, and I think Paul is suggesting this too, that we were able to love people from like God's love pouring into us instead of out of obligation or because we know we should or because it's the Christian thing to do. And in that way, like when God's love is pouring in you, man, Jesus' fierce agenda and all-consuming like stuff, man, it barrels past the obligation and the should and like the fear of being risky and stupid and all the stuff that we just have naturally boiling into us, and it starts meeting the needs in people around us. Like, it actually connects them to Jesus, and at the same time, like, he's connecting our needs with him. Like, we're all like getting connected to Jesus, which is a far better deal. Listen to this Donald Miller quote. He is the author of a lot of really good books, but his latest one is A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. It's a quote about how we actually fit into the big picture of what God's doing. And the he's referring to here is a guy in his book. He says this. He said to me I was a tree in a story about a forest, and that it was arrogant of me to believe any differently. He told me the story of the forest is better than the story of the tree. He understood the story was not about him, and that he cared more about the story than he did about himself. It's cool to think about, like, God so rearranging and transforming us that the after picture is us ending to, like, caring about others more than we care about ourselves. And that it's not because we're making that happen, but that it's actually something coming from Jesus in our lives. And that he's, like, the orienter of the big picture pouring into us, and like that's part of actually becoming who we're made to be. And as we do this, we find one more thing, that like Jesus like kicks the bucket list out from under us. Like, he turns it upside down. All these things that we have like depended on for security, like even things that, man, are milestones in our lives that we feel like this is how we can like know that we're successful or we're progressing or getting better. Man, he just like turns it upside down. And what used to feel comfortable and safe and normal in our picket fences, man, like we start engaging with others like this, we start asking Jesus to be boss, and we start getting something supernatural, it changes everything. Like, the dinner party gets wild now. Like, we're starting to like engage each other into Jesus, and we're willing to risk and be weak and be stupid and confront and sacrifice and all the hard stuff. And we're doing it because we're heading towards this eternal picture of where God's going, and it's good and hopeful. Why don't you guys stand up with me? So I know that there's a thing in all of us that really does want to be transformed. That even though like it freaks us out to think about like letting God dig into areas or even be honest about stuff, like he's made us to want to become something. And so what we do right now is we never just want to talk about it, but we always want to provide time for us to actually meet and get ministry and like let God do something about it. So at the end of every service, we have people come up here. We call them our ministry team. And you guys can come up right now. And these people pray for you guys. And they're actually doing the thing of asking God, like, what are you doing in this person's life? Like, they're asking for, like, that eternal picture thing of what God's really doing. And then God comes and shows up and does something, like, inside of us. And so I'm going to invite you guys, just like as we've been talking today about the stuff that God would want to put in us and pull on us and, like, change our perspectives, to come and mingle with God up here and let him do something even more in that. Like, there might be people here who have lost hope of even having an after picture in their lives. Like, they kind of have just settled with just going ahead and like kind of making do with what they have. Or I felt like this too, that other, like, there's some of us who really do want to jump into this, and we want to be more in tune with what God is doing, or we want to be engaged with people around us. And there's others of us too who are still just like on the surface with Jesus. Like, we haven't experienced him come and dig into the deep parts of us and begin like sharing his supernatural life with us. And man, it's a really good thing. And I wouldn't want any of us to miss out on that. So if those things are going on in you, or like the host of all other things in our lives, like, come on up and let these guys pray for you. And they're just going to let God come even more and do even more of those things. I'm just going to pray for us as we head into that. So Jesus, thank you so much for being a God who is just like this transformation, like, wild man that you can't help but just like make our lives and rearrange and recreate. And God, I ask that you would just like come right now in this room and that we would feel your presence and that we would trust you, that we would know that you're good. God, would you start putting your fingers right now on the places that you just want to come? And God, we just give you permission right now to be boss. We trust that what you have to say and do, God, is actually good. So you guys just keep connecting with him and come on up and let him do things. And even while you're worshiping, he's going to just put his fingers on more. Cool.